Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. It's Jules here, and we've got a new intro. It's awesome.
How about that?
Yeah. Well done, Mitch.
Sick stuff.
Amazing. Yes, it was all Mitch.
And I'm joined by two fantastic co-hosts. We've got Adrian and Dan. How are you doing, guys?
Good, Jules, mate. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm feeling full of that evil energy today, so I'm ready. To talk about some games.
Did you steal candy from a baby again? Is that why?
Ten candies.
Oh my god! Look out!
So not only did he steal candy from my baby, he's on a sugar rush as well.
That's it. Sugar rush, sure. Nice. So we've got loads to talk about today. So let's just jump straight into our chit chat. I wanted to start off today by talking about a cause that we're actually supporting or promoting, I should say, or raising awareness for at the moment, and that is the Cure Cancer charity, which raised money for cancer research. And they've got a campaign that has launched now to raise money this year for different cancer research. And they're doing it in conjunction. They're doing a lot of things, but one of the things they're doing is promoting it through the gaming community. And we wanted to be a part of that. And so what we're doing is encouraging you guys as a community to organize a game night at any point during the month of February, even into March, and just to donate to the cause. So there's a couple of hashtags that you can use to put on social media when you do your event. You can use hashtag barbecue or hashtag game on cancer and share those photos around. So get together with your mates, encourage people to donate. We'll have a link in the show notes as where you can donate to for a good cause. Just get together, have some fun and donate some money to a good cause.
It's definitely about building the awareness as well, because it's you know, it is a really good cause, and they reach out because there's a lot of streamers and gamers, but not a lot of the tabletop industry, you know, in this thing. So it'd be nice to share what we do together as groups. And even if you're, you know, even if you're not donating, please just any photos that you take of your game night and stuff, use the hashtags barbecue and game on cancer, because that helps build their awareness to other people.
So. Absolutely.
And it's one of those, it's one of those fundraising sort of things where they're like the morning tea one, where they're encouraging people to have a barbecue and raise awareness. And so they're reaching out to the gaming industry, but they're also doing barbecues, and we sit perfectly within that sort of Venn diagram. It's like, well, we'd be crazy not to get on board. Of course we're going to do what we can. So expect to see a lot of hashtags, over the coming week or two. Is it for the remainder of February, guys?
So it goes to the 31st of March, all the way through to the end of March. So plenty of time to organize a game day for your mates.
And you know what? Well, we did talk about it a little while ago, but I think what we might do as well, just off the cuff, we might organize a couple of nights as well on Discord where a few of us can get on and run a few, because we have all those gaming channels ready to go.
Yeah, that's right.
And quite often those gaming channels are really busy. With people playing stuff on BGA or TTS on like Fridays and Saturdays, but maybe we can pick a few nights during the week and we can all just get together and play some games and sort of raise a bit more of awareness about the barbecue and the game on cancer hashtags. So keep an eye out for that as well.
Yeah, good stuff. So we also have an exciting month coming up in March, which is Oceania Month. So we're doing it again this year. And we have a load of exciting guests coming up for that month. So get excited for that. We'll put some promotions out in the coming weeks as to who we're having on the show in that month. But I'm excited for this one again. Really good to highlight some of the talent in our region.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of that this year. Like there's a lot of like games that have been from this region, artists from this region that are starting to get worldwide notoriety for, you know, certain flipping rights and other things, you know. So,
I was going to say, are we allowed to spoil anything? But that's a bit of a hint right there. So.
Dropping bombs, why not? But yeah, it's. I mean, like there's some amazing talent out here, and it's really nice to highlight some of that. And we had a really good year last year with all the guests that we had and lots of good conversation and lots of stuff that at the time I didn't realize in some of these Kickstarters and how they worked. And it was really good to see insights from people in the industry that were on the ground level and were starting out. So, yeah, it was really cool. So
One of my favorites from last year, and I can't remember who they were, but I know we had two budding sort of designers on the same episode, and they were even just bouncing things off each other as well, yeah. and learning things off each other. So
Jack Morgan and Ollie.
So, I mean, if we can do that and promote even just the fact that, hey, we're not just showcasing designers and publishers in the Australian sort of New Zealand region, but the fact that we can help them sort of network amongst each other and promote them, I think that's great. So we'll be doing a bit. Have we got a few more of those lined up? I think there's at least one double episode.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there is actually.
It's going to be really cool.
Awesome. What else has been going on? You've been talking about pandemic?
There is that. So there's a, talking about that. There's a spoiler podcast, which we've decided to start calling this series the Spoiler Casts. And Sarah and I have a very in-depth conversation about Pandemic Legacy Season 1. Now, the reason why we chose that was because we put a vote out to community members, and that's the one that got picked. We will do more votes in the future and let the Patreon people decide. I can't remember the votes exactly. I think it was Pandemic Season 1 Spoiler Cast. It was Sarah and I picked a couple of music videos each, and we try and convince maybe Connor to tell us which two music videos he would like to watch the most. The other one, I don't remember what it was. It was something, I think it was a Marvel. It was Boba Fett, actually. It was the Book of Boba Fett spoiler podcast. And then the last one was Mitch has to sing Informer.
Yes.
Energy string, but I left that bit out, but that was in the subtext. But that got a lot of votes. That was getting some heat. So he almost had to sing that. And I'm telling you, I would love it. He is actually really good at it. He is actually so good at it. I'm not kidding. So it's
well I wouldn't go so far as to say he's surprisingly good at it.
He has obviously spent many hours learning that song. It's probably his go-to
song in the shower or something. That's why he's got it down pat.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, we did a spoiler cast for Pandemic, and the first one drops on Thursday next week, which I can't remember the date for that. Sorry, bear with me. That is the 17th.
And thanks for editing that one as well, Adrian, because I couldn't edit it because – I haven't finished Pandemic, so I couldn't actually edit that one without spoiling it for myself. Did you guys go through it month by month? Is that how you did it? Or?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's a spoiler card. Sure. It's going to be it's just spoilers from the start. It's amazing to see the differences in the play style, the differences in the month by month what happened. The different effects of the game, the different ways we played, the different abilities we upgraded, the different characters we used. Like it was really different. And going through that slowly and sort of taking that piece by piece was really interesting because I hadn't really assessed anybody else's game at all. Like I played my Legacy. Mm. Have you played Legacy? Yes, it was amazing. That's about it. But to really like go through it and nitpick through it was really fun, and I really enjoyed it. And it brought back memories of that game that made me just honestly, when I finished that, all me and Sarah were just like, we just want to play it again. Like I want to play it again.
All right.
Man. Yeah, it was really interesting. It was like, I just want to play it, but do something different. Like, you know, do this a little bit at the start different that just cascades through the whole game and changes
everything. Different journey.
Yeah. Can I ask, is there any difference between the blue and the red?
No. And we have different copies. So she has the red and I have the blue. And we because I could see her box and I was like, hang on, you got the red one. or the black one or whatever it was. And I had the blue one.
I think it's red and blue because I have the blue. Yeah.
Cool.
But that's on Patreon. So any Patreon supporters, you will get that content straight away. And enjoy it. Please leave feedback. We're starting to use the actual Patreon platform now a lot more for voting. Or upcoming content that you guys want to see. Mm-hmm. So engage with that, please, because it really helps us kind of narrow down what you'd like to see from us.
Yeah. So, and don't forget, if you join Patreon, which we'd love to have your support, and we'll give you more information later in the show about how to do that, but if you join Patreon, you actually get access to the back catalogue of all the Patreon podcasts we've created, including 2 years' worth of Christmas pods as well. We'd have done the 12 days of Christmas, the 12 pods of Christmas, 2 years in a row. So that's at least 24 episodes off the bat you'll have access to.
Yeah, and they are pretty crazy, some of those are. Sorry, I've got a lot of them, so they get pretty messy.
Yeah,
Excellent.
Exactly right. It's Christmas time.
So, this past weekend, Brisbane Game Day. How was that, Adrian?
It was crazy. It was full on from start to finish. I mean, I can't sleep anyway. We all know I'm a bit of an insomniac. So I was up at 5 a.m. and I was like, I'll just go back to sleep and have a little bit more sleep. And then I was just like a Christmas kid. Like I just couldn't sleep. Just twitching to get out of bed. And you know, like it's like when you watch, like, you know, they say watch the kettle and it takes forever to boil. But if you leave it alone. So I was like watching the clock, watching the clock, watching the clock. And it was going slower and slower. Then I was like, then I forgot about it. Then I was like, oh, I'm late. I've got a rush. Oh my God, what's happened? So I was like running around and I actually made an appearance on the ABC radio that morning.
Oh, yeah, yes. That's right.
Yeah, promoting the game day and promoting the podcast and the community and stuff.
Have we been able to find that link? How did the interview go?
It's not uploaded yet, but okay. It should be soon.
Yeah,
it's kind how'd of it funny go? Because it went really well, actually. I was incredibly nervous, even though the podcast probably does get more listeners.
Yeah.
I was really worried. I was like, why am I freaking out? I do this every week, like more than every week. I probably do it more than the once a week lady that's it's hosting. Because
we can
show.
Edit out all the nonsense you say.
Yeah, this is true. 70% less me is always a good thing. But like it's I was really nervous, but it was great. And then we went straight for there and all the volunteers in Brisbane, we have a bit of a sort of team building thing where we all meet in the morning, we go get a McDonald's coffee or muffin or whatever, have a chat, and then we go to the thing, start setting up the whole function. But it was at like, well, man, I think by 11 o'clock there were 70 people in there. So an hour in, we'd already checked in 70 people. It was very busy from the get-go, and it didn't stop all day. I was at 11 o'clock at night. There was still tables of people playing games. It was really cool. Had a That's great awesome. Time. Met some amazing people. Met loads of new people, which was really cool because we've seen quite a few familiar faces, and that's always lovely because you get to reminisce, you get to meet them again, and it's really nice to, you know, see them because sometimes that's the only time I see these people because they live in the opposite end of Brisbane or they live on the Gold Coast and they come up for these ends. Some people come from Hervey Bay. Like that's 4 hours away. And there's a few people that are doing that. So please, guys, carpool, like share that so you don't drive on your own. That's crazy. But like it was really cool. I really enjoyed it. Met some great new people. Had an awesome time. Absolutely exhausted by the end. 2 o'clock, I got home. By the time I'd offloaded the ute, got all the games back into the house and stuff because it started to rain a bit, so I couldn't leave them on the back of the car. So,
oh, good stuff.
It was good.
Wish I was there.
Yeah. Well, there is another opportunity coming up. We have the next Sydney game day. The tickets are live right now. That's for the 9th of April. From 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. at the Castle Hill RSL, and tickets are $15 each. So you can head over to Eventbrite for those tickets, and we'll have links in the show notes for how to get those.
Funny because my phone's just buzzed because another ticket's been sold for that event. So getting quick.
It must have heard you.
Yeah, getting quick, guys. right. So games. We've talked about a lot of other stuff, but
I'd love to talk about a game.
So we're probably going to talk about the same thing.
Okay, this is, go on.
For a I'll board game podcast, for a board game podcast, it's only fitting we start with a video game.
That's right.
Frostpunk. I have played Frostpunk for the first time this week as the video game, and I know it came out years ago, but oh my goodness, I was enthralled. It is an amazing game. I am absolutely in love with it. And part of me is like, oh, why did I not back the Kickstarter for the board game version? But man, I've clocked a lot of hours this past week on it.
Already?
I have seen. Oh, yeah. Every time I see Discord, it says Jules. Then it says playing Frostpunk underneath. Yeah. That's all it says. And I'm like, oh dear. Oh dear, Jules, you're going down that rabbit hole. It's so good because it's like an engine builder, right?
Yes.
That's how it works. And that's how the board game works. But it adds that element of conflict, of decision, of like, do I want to enforce child labor?
Yeah.
Or do I want to enforce child education and educate them to be more engineers or more doctors, but then lose my workforce for a prolonged period of time?
Yeah.
Then other people might get sick because I'm overworking the laborers.
Yes.
It's so clever. And the board game, from what I've seen, and I've only played like one round solo by myself, integrates that like seamlessly.
Yeah,
like,
that's so cool.
From the guys who did Nemesis, This War of Mine, like he knows how to do a dreary theme. Yeah, he knows how to do that really well. So I'm just, all it does, because I haven't played it for years. I played it when it first came out. I played like the first expansion. And I haven't played it much. But when I went back to it because I just got a Frostpunk update for the Kickstarter. I was what? I'll just update the game and I'll have a little go. Then I'm like 14 hours later, just still trying to build this engine. But yeah, it's really cool. The game's fantastic, but the board game just looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it's really fun now. Like when I first started playing it, I was getting crushed. Like the system was harsh. And there's so many elements you have to balance at the same time, making sure your workforce is healthy, that you're feeding everyone, that you're keeping everyone warm. And
but isn't that like a board game in itself? It sounds like a board game.
The I reckon the board game's going to be phenomenal. But man, I was getting crushed. But now I've got a good system and I'm starting to go through some of the scenario missions. And they have a little bit of twist here and there. But man, it's such a good game. So amazing.
And the board game does that as well. You start with the core scenario. Mm-hmm. The board game has like the Dreadnought and other scenarios that you add.
Awesome.
And play all these different versions of the same thing. So,
that's awesome.
So explain it to me, guys. Is it like I'm assuming you're playing solo against an AI, are you?
So the video game or the board game will be a cooperative game.
Oh, no, I was talking about the video game specifically.
So the video game's you're playing it on your own.
The
theme is the world has gone super cold and there's just snow and ice everywhere and you have to start a new town. You have this giant coal furnace in the middle that heats the whole town and you have to just your three resources that you're collecting, your wood, your steel, and
coal
to power the thing. So you start by building tents, and then you eventually upgrade those to bunk houses, and then proper houses that have more insulation. And you have like you're just trying to survive against the elements. So you go through days, and it's sort of all in real time the progress of the game. And it gets colder and warmer and you have to upgrade your technologies enough and it gets to a point where there's a massive storm that comes through and you have to have hunkered down or you have to have collected enough resources to survive that storm.
And feed everybody as well.
Yeah. I was watching Adrian play the other day and it looked like the games that I grew up with playing, like the original Warcraft and Starcraft and all those, but then it was bringing up pop-ups with like decision trees and stuff.
Yeah, so random events.
It's really really unique.
And you send out like a team of explorers and you explore different parts of the world and they'll say you found a bunch of resources, you can collect that. But you also find other people wandering through the wilderness and you can go, let's escort them back to the city, or you can just go, the city's that way, but some of them will die if you don't escort them, or you can just leave them to die. Like there's really dark choices you have to make in that game. And
literally you've sizzled the board game for me, which is going to happen in 6 months. Because it sounds exactly the same. There's no difference at all. It's like the same thing, the actions, the workers, everything is like the same. So it's so cool.
You have, because you're playing essentially as the captain of running this town. And so you can enact laws. So you can, down the medical route, you can do things like you'll take care of the ill and you have to build houses to house those people that have been injured and can't work again. Or you can go through to choose radical treatments where you amputate those that have gotten frostbite and then can build prosthetics later for them to get them back in the workforce. There's so many different things you can do in this game. It is just a masterpiece.
Yeah. I'm so glad you liked it because I told you, I was like, Jules, I think you'll really like this, dude. I think you'll like this. And you're like, I'll get it. And you got it. We're like, this is amazing. Yeah. And you haven't stopped since.
No regrets.
Oh, cool.
What prompted you to buy? Is it on sale on Steam at the moment? Or
yeah, I think it did have
it's on
a sale.
Steam.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got a whole bunch because the second one's coming out later this
Frostpunk
year.
So
they're doing big promotional stuff.
No, it's already going to be a big month for me on PlayStation, so I can't get anything else on Steam. I'm already getting Destiny 2, Witch Queen, and also Horizon
Zero Dawn,
Forbidden West. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
How's that so? That'll be me. So you'll see in Discord, you'll see Danny's playing Destiny 2.
All right, what about board games? What have you guys been playing recently?
I've been dipping back into my old collection, which is why I was a bit, I don't know whether I should be on the show tonight because I haven't played any new games, but I do actually have something I will sizzle shortly. It was funny, the other day I was looking for Jack. I don't know. Usually when my boys are really quiet in the house, usually means there's something missing, something going on. And so I found Ollie in his room just playing with cars, and I called out to Jack. I said, Jack, where are you? And he goes, I'm in the office. And so the office is obviously our study where I work, but it's also where all my games are. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, just playing one of your games. And I couldn't make it from one end of the house to the other end quicker. I'm just like, oh, no, what's he doing? And he had pulled off the shelf Land versus Sea. And he was spreading all, he had spread all the tiles out over the ground, and he was making this enormous map.
Yeah, so cool.
The only thing I can think of is that he'd seen Jen and I play it once or twice.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, do you want me to teach you how to play it? And he goes, yeah. So I sort of reset it all. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, he picked it up really, really quickly. We didn't play with any of the advanced rules or anything.
Sure.
But it wasn't a game that had jumped out at me straight away as something that I should probably that I could teach him. But he picked it up really quickly. If anyone who hasn't played or isn't familiar, because we had Kim, the designer, from Good Game Publishing on the show at the end of last year. But you basically you play either the land or the sea, and you have all these hexagonal tiles, about 50 odd, nearly 60 tiles. And each of the tiles have a portion of land and sea on them, and they're actually two-sided, so you can flip them over. And you're placing these tiles in between the two of you, the two-player game, and if you're the sea, you're trying to make these isolated lakes, if you like, okay, by placing the tiles down so that the land sort of traps the sea. But if you're if you're playing the land, you're trying to place tiles that creates islands. Mm-hmm. And so there's always a bit of a push and pull, but what invariably happens is you end up focusing on different areas of the map so that you can secure your islands and the other person can secure their land. But then if I'm working on land, I'm trying to make these islands. Of course, when I do succeed in scoring on creating an island, which, by the way, you score then by counting how many tiles have made that island, then of course that island is completely surrounded by sea, which then gives my opponent the opportunity to start sort of closing in those seas with islands, with land to make their seas. And it's such a clever game, the way it's really well balanced. And it doesn't take that long to play. It plays in about half an hour. And you play until there's no tiles left. So by the time you've finished, you've got this enormous sort of map that you've created with the two, which in itself looks really, really impressive. And that was what drew Jack to it in the first place. And I had actually mentioned to him when I was explaining it to him, I said, because he was talking about, he was looking at all the different pictures, and I said, well, there is an advanced version where if you're playing the ocean and then it's coral, then you can line all the coral up. If you can line the coral up, you get bonuses. And if you're playing on the land, there are mountains. If you can actually make almost like a range of mountains on those enclosed land spaces, you get bonuses as well. So then halfway through, he started placing the coral into each other and goes, can we play for the coral as well? I'm like, no. You can't change the rules halfway. You can't change the rules halfway through because Daddy wasn't focusing on mountains.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with the way he picked it up, but also I think it's a testament to the game because it's one of those games that is so simple to learn, but it gets really crunchy when you start to, if particularly playing someone who's really familiar with it, you can get really, really strategic in it. So I was rapt that he'd pulled that off the shelf. Nice. You guys have both played.
Jules playtested it and stuff when it was being still in its playtest phase, but I haven't played it myself. But all I can say is that I saw it out multiple times at the game day yesterday, 4 or 5 times.
Oh, good.
Great. Game getting pulled out and played. Yeah, and even someone played it on like
that's
the big
a great
stage,
game day game.
We had a big stage there, and and the map just looks so cool. Like I came straight over and was like, wow, that looks
when it's finished, it's such a, like it starts off small. When it's finished, it's such an impressive thing to have on the table.
Yeah.
And then you just put it back in the box and go, right, let's go again.
Yeah.
There's obviously there's other things in there as well, but I'll leave that for you to discover.
Yeah, cool. So recently I got to play for the first time in a while, It's a Wonderful World. It's been a little while since I'd played it, and I got to play 6-player, so using the expansion, and taught some people for the first time, and we had a great time. I crushed it. I'd used the grey and black suits to win. I absolutely
nailed
that.
Were you using the expansion,
Jules? Everything. Yeah, expansion.
Yeah, cool.
Yes. So yeah, everything just aligned right. I had the card that gave, I think, 6 points for every pair of grey and black card, and just got all these multipliers for black cards. It was just all working perfectly.
Did you get that early in the game, or did you get it late in the game and it just worked out?
It was, I think it was in the second round, so it was early.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I just ran hard with it, and it paid off dividends. So, yeah, that was really, really fun. It'd been a while since I played it, but, man, it's a good engine-building game.
Such a good game. I like...
It's such a stayer for me.
Yeah, it's the same for me. I can't get rid of it because I love the card drafting mechanic in it, because the, like, you know, I love Res Arcana. It's one of my favorite engine builders. Like, it's in my top 10. Mm-hmm. But the game doesn't require you to draft. You can play it with the shuffle. Whereas the core game for It's a Wonderful World is card drafting. You have to do it. So that's why it's my favorite card drafting game, because it's not an optional thing.
Yes.
It has to be done. Even though Res Arcana to me has to be drafted, it's not a necessity.
No.
Like, you can still play it without it. Whereas this doesn't have that. And I love that game. I love the engine builder. I love the expansion. And I also love the legacy expansion, that what it adds once you've finished. So once you've finished it, it adds the fact that there's some statues and some war memorials in the game that give you financiers as an income. And they also give you red resources as an income.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, I know that's, you know, that game's, you know, it's got some spoilers in it, but that's one of the things that you kind of get like third way through the game.
Yeah. I haven't cracked open the legacy expansion yet. So,
That foil packet.
I've tried to forget about it.
I couldn't help it. It reminded me of my FLIR cards when I was a kid, the Marvel cards. I just had to open that packet.
I was thinking Pokemon cards.
Yeah, same thing. Same. No, but I'll tell you what as well. The end of that game had a really cool twist in it that I really enjoyed, and I know you would love it, Jules. You can play it two-player and just be – it's not a long thing, but I know that thing at the end is such a you thing.
Cool. You'd love it. All right.
I promise.
Good stuff. Yeah. One other thing, I don't know how much I can say about it, so I'll be super vague, but I played the next game coming from the designers of Three Sisters with Mitch during the last week.
Yeah.
That's one to keep your eye on. I had a good fun time with that one. It's very different from Three Sisters and Fleet.
Matt Riddle said that, that when he was on the podcast, he said that Fleet, you know, and Three Sisters share the same DNA, whereas this is a separate game. It's not any of the same mechanics.
Totally different. Totally different. So I don't know when that's going to crowdfunding, but it felt like a pretty complete game when I played it.
I was just about to ask you,
It's soon. I think it's in the coming months.
So three winners then, do you think? That would be your Fleet, Three Sisters, and this are all good? Like, how do you think they're all?
Yeah, I think they're all good. Yeah. I would play any of them happily. Absolutely.
Yeah. See, I am going to say something controversial that was kind of touched up on the last episode, that everyone's going to go, "What, are you crazy?" But everyone knows I'm crazy, so it's fine. Like, I prefer Fleet.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
I don't care what you
say. I was on that episode as well.
I know it's lame and it's not a lot, but I like that the dice have the items on the dice and not numbers. I don't know, it's silly.
Oh, Three Sisters has the pumpkins.
Number one is a pumpkin. I understand.
Yeah.
But, like, I just like that the dice has them on there. So when you roll them, you look at them and you know what you're getting. I know that they go to the locations on the board and it has that thing. But I don't know. It's just something about it.
It's funny because when Mitch first introduced most of us, if not all of us, to Fleet the Dice game, I remember thinking, like, this is great in terms of, because my earliest experiences of Roll and Rights were like Garshon Clever and some of those sorts of games. And there was Flip and Rights, like Welcome To and whatnot. But this was like an advanced Roll and Write for me, and I really, really loved it. And then started playing when Three Sisters came out and started learning that and playing that and teaching that to game days. And I'm just like, this makes athletes seem really basic all of a sudden because you've got those extra decision make the extra decisions on the actual the dice itself on that tableau. I haven't been back and played Fleet since. I probably should just to sort of refresh my memory on or refresh how I feel about that. But having playing a lot of Three Sisters in the last sort of month or two, I'm just like, oh, this makes that one feel not juvenile, but just a lot more basic than Three Sisters.
Yeah, you can just see how Three Sisters is built upon that D&D.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely, you know, they said it's a spiritual successor.
Even the point I like where you've got the garden on the top half of the left one, but it's not just the tracks anymore of the fish. It's actually the positioning of those tracks with the pumpkins around the outside with the perennials.
Yeah,
that's actually really clever. So they've taken the element of tracks, but then made those almost like, well, they literally bent those tracks around the garden, and so they actually each track influences each other as opposed to just being in sort of standalone silos.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say, I am a massive fan of their podcast.
Their
Motor City Gameworks podcast is phenomenal. And they get like local teachers on there who teach games at high schools. And it's such a cool podcast. They also, they have a phenomenally cool intro. I love the intro song to their thing, to their podcast.
Is it as good as ours?
I don't know. It's very cool.
Can you rock out? Can you rock out to this?
There's no rocking out. It's just like cool. But it's, I tell you another thing as well that I really like. I like how they call them, because we all say, oh, it's a heavy roll and right. It's a heavy roll and right. But their terminology for it is loaded. They call it a loaded roll and right. And I find that really cool. And I really want to know where that term came from. So I'm going to have to hassle them on Twitter.
Well, as someone with casino background, it's usually not good when the dice are loaded. I'll just say that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. Like, I don't mind
when it's loaded.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was from on the house perspective. So it was never good for us.
Yeah.
I've actually been spending a bit of time on BGA. Initially, it was with some guys in the community as well, but I've also gone rogue and started just playing some random games because I'm trying to teach myself Feast for Odin.
Ooh.
And I can't remember who it was. It might have been Jonathan on Discord who started a game, and I just went, oh, I'll join in. I've never played it before. And pretty soon realized that, even just reading the rules as I'm going, not a good idea. I got absolutely trounced. My score at the end was -5, and I was bouncing around everyone else's boards going, how'd they do that? You've got two longhouses. You've got three other islands, and the scores were just. I'm just like, oh, I can't work this out. So I played another game against some randoms, and I started trying a few different things. Mm-hmm. And then someone the other day on Discord, it might have been Torquium, actually helped me start a solo game because I tried before. I couldn't work out how to do solo. I didn't realize that you're technically doing training mode, which makes sense, I suppose, because you can't earn the ELO points just by playing over and over again.
That would be broken.
Yeah. So I'm slowly getting better at it, but I'm gonna keep at it before I actually play someone in real life so I don't embarrass myself. But it's been a massive blind spot in my gaming for a long time. And then I know at the end of last year or the start of this year when the guys from Thinkathema, Amy and Maggie, they talked about Feast for Odin. Yeah, as being their number one game. And they both did about three gaming lessons of Feast for Odin for all the guys at the Melbourne Game Day.
Yeah, they did.
I'd love to have jumped in on that. But so I thought, you know what, it's about time I learnt myself. So I think my best score at the moment is 43, but I'm getting better, guys. So
cool.
I'll check back in a few weeks later what my score is.
Tell me when your score matches your age at 111.
Oh, yeah, sure. No worries.
What do you think of the game, Jules?
You really just edit that bit out.
I've never played a Feast for Odin. I've watched... I sat in on a game partway through. I think Steve and Mitch were playing together. So,
you like your Vikings breaking skulls, always not even seafood.
Yeah, I know. The theme doesn't interest me that much, but the puzzle looks very fascinating and very intriguing.
It was a polyomino that sort of got me, but then there's other little things in there as well. There's rolling dice for when you go raiding or hunting and whatnot, and if you've got certain cards or certain the resources at your disposal, you can mitigate the dice roll to make it a success. And I guess it's probably different playing. The Plague Solo is interesting because you're actually playing two different colors. Mm-hmm. So you've got your yellow meeples, and then they stay on the board for round two when you play the black meeples. So they actually take the spots that
you're blocking yourself. For you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose you could potentially plan ahead and okay, I'm going to take these ones. I'm not at that level yet. Yeah. You could potentially sort of game the game. Say, well, I'm going to take these ones now so I know I can take the other ones that are available next time. Whereas when you're playing with people, you don't know what the hell people are going to do.
Yeah.
So there's that. But, yeah, I'm going to cut my teeth on solo games a few more times first before I go back into another few games on BGA. And, oh, look out, people, when I get my game on.
Nice.
You won't see any minus fives from me.
Hey everyone, Jules here from the Board Game Barbecue. Just wanted to thank our first sponsor for today's episode, which is Advent Games. Dean and his team have an amazing website with loads of different categorization to find the perfect game for you. They have $10 flat rate shipping around Australia and have got an awesome curated website, as I've said. They support us directly through the Sydney Game Day as well. So if you're looking for a new game, head over to adventgames.com.au and try and find your next sizzling game. So, speaking of BGA, I guess the game I wanted to sizzle this week is Teotihuacan. It's not anything new to the podcast.
Never heard of it.
It's nothing new to the podcast.
I've never heard of it.
Because you said it so confidently.
Yeah. What if I say City of Gods?
I don't want to stumble over it.
Go
ahead.
So I played it online this week with a few members from the community on Board Game Arena, and I think it was either my third or fourth time trying it. I've only ever played the game online, and every other time I sort of understood the puzzle, but everyone was doing far better than me. Everyone to date that I'd played with, it was very well experienced at the game. And I kind of was like, yeah, that was fun. Like, there was a puzzle in it, but it was like, obviously, there's more I can squeeze out of that. And just the way that the board can be randomly set up each time, that puzzle changes each time. And this game, I finally feel like it clicked in my brain. Like, I had that moment where just my mind opened into the Matrix and I was like, oh, okay, I can move this one in three turns time and then this will trigger with this. It was really, really fun and enjoyable for me just seeing that plan come together. I really honed in on just a couple of things. And it was just really good fun. It made me want to get my actual physical copy out and play that in person, because building that structure in the middle, it just looked really visually awesome, and the artwork's really cool. There's lots of little details on the board. So, yeah, I don't have much else to say. There's probably 15 other episodes you can listen to about Teo on this podcast, but I had a blast playing it. I really feel like it clicked for me. I'm not really a Euro player, but, man, I had a great time playing this.
Did you find there was much player interaction in terms of getting in each other's way? Because I've had some games where I'm almost doing my own thing, because you get that, okay, I can go here and here and here. And there's other games where every time I want to go somewhere, everyone else is there and it just costs me a fortune in cocoa. Yeah.
So I feel like this game, what happened was everyone else was getting in each other's way. I felt like I was on my own most of the time. I was like on another trajectory. And I feel like I hardly paid any cocoa the whole game. The first after the first eclipse, I had one of the tiles to pay no cocoa, so I knew that going, and so I just went hard. But after that, I didn't have to take too many turns just collecting cocoa, because there was a lot of times where I could pay zero because no one else was there.
It just worked out perfectly.
Yeah, it just worked out. It'll probably never happen again, but it was good.
It's did such you, did a you cap out game.
The, literally cap the pyramid in the middle?
I think we were two pieces from capping it. It was very close.
I had a game where once we capped it.
Yeah. Dan, same.
Playing with different people is different strategies. Yeah. Sometimes people go heavy on the decorations as well. Sometimes people just leave the decorations right alone and just focus on building it. And other times it's not built as high, but there is a lot of decorations on the steps as well. It's just, I like the fact that when you play with different people, there's different things that come out every time.
Yeah. I went hard on building the pyramid and decorations. So everything just worked harmoniously doing those two things. It was just...
You have the tech.
Yeah, really good.
That gave you the extra victory points for building on the pyramid?
Yes, I did. Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
And the decorations as well?
I think I got the decorations later on, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But yeah, those definitely had the building.
I'd like to have both of those.
Yeah.
Just smash those decorations. It was really good. Pyramid. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Great game.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's my season game. Teotihuacan or Teotihuacan or Teo, however you want to pronounce it.
I think Teotihuacan. Like, that's how I say it. Teotihuacan.
Yeah, I think that's how I say it too. Teotihuacan.
cool.
I was going to say something really, really quick. And this came out of a discussion that we had a bunch of episodes ago. I know Steve was on it because we were talking about games that we were talking about games from last year and games that we had either loved or games that we'd missed, games that hadn't come out here yet. And one of the games that I mentioned that I was looking forward to, or had been looking forward to, was a game called Mazescape. And it's not really a game. It's more of a puzzle, kind of an activity sort of thing. It's just your basic sort of maze, trying to get from the start to the finish of a maze on steroids, as Mitch would say. And I had a few people reach out to me going, hey, it's available online. Have you seen it's available in stores? And I think I ended up downloading it. Sorry, I'm not a pirate. I purchased a copy of it from the Meeple people in Brisbane because I still haven't seen it anywhere in Victoria. But the Mazescape, it's fascinating. It reminds me of some of the more complex sort of puzzles that I used to sort of build when I was little. I remember I did a school project one year. And I actually built a game into it, and there was like a maze where you'd follow the maze and then it would actually go over the page and you'd turn the page. And well, that's exactly what this is. So imagine one of those big old school maps when you're traveling cross country and there was no sort of Melways or there was no Google Maps, and you had one of those enormous maps that would fold and then you'd unfold and whatnot. That's what this is.
Did you use a sextant to navigate the stars?
Well, no, I just used my stars, yeah.
What's a sextant?
Right, smart ass.
What is that? Why do you need to know more about a sextant? What is that? Sounds very old school.
Adrian, it's not what you think it is.
Okay.
It's not a six people.
It's a nautical navigation tool.
Ah, okay.
All right, let's get this back on track, fellas. Mazescape is a maze. It comes in the form of a book. Or like a map that you unfold, but what you're doing is you're starting at the start and then you move over the page and then you open it up and then you can move back. And so the maze goes from just being two pages, it can go to four pages or it can go to six pages. And so you're sort of moving across the page and then opening a page up and then doubling back. And you're trying to get, first of all, from point A to point B. And once the whole thing's unfolded, it looks like an Escher drawing where you've got archways and stairs going up because the whole thing is in this sort of 3D. It's Escher, isn't it, that I'm thinking of?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah.
So you've got like stairways that go to nowhere and...
Correct.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes.
And you end up like upside down and...
Well, yeah, like Labyrinth from the
that's Bowie so movie. Cool.
That's what it looks like, yeah. So there's heaps of those sorts of archways. The game itself, the box comes with seven of these and they get progressively difficult. Like the first one I knocked out probably in about 5 minutes. Game, the second one I did in about 10, and the third one I haven't been able to finish yet.
Oh, wow.
Because it just ends up just twisting my noodle. They give you like a little wooden pencil to help you sort of
track,
navigate.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But what happens is when you move over the page, then you can open that first page up, you can cross back in. And the artwork is really, is really nice. It reminds me of, I just forgotten that name. There was a iOS game ages ago that was a similar thing where it looked like an Escher painting where you could follow those tracks around. It's completely gone out of my head.
Oh,
now,
I know that game. I know the one you mean, and I don't know the name either.
someone can let us know what their game is. But for a game, for an activity, it's super, super fun and a lot of bang for your buck. It's not that expensive. It was like $25, maybe $30.
Okay.
It's great. And it's one of those things where once you do it, you can put it away and the next week get it out and there's no way you're going to remember how to do it. So you're still going to get value out of it. But for something as simple as, hey, this is just a maze here from A to B, it's great. And it would be very easy. I've done it on my own, but I could do it with the boys. You could do it as a group. You can put it on the table like you do with like a micro macro and everyone can sort of offer advice. There's other, each booklet, if you like, has other things to do. So there's certain on the first one, there's these urns. So you've got to acquire all five urns. There's also a goddess kind of like figurine that you have to collect. And it's almost like some of those things where you can see it, but how the hell do I get over there? I can't. And then you sort of got to unfold and refold the map to try and get over to this side of the maze just to sort of tag that that statue. It's just really clever. There's two different versions that are out. I got the one called Ariadne, mm-hmm. And there's a second one out. So, check that out. But that's Mazescape.
That sounds really cool.
The publisher is Devia.
Devia, yeah. Man, oh, they're on fire.
Great games.
Yeah.
They're smashing it.
So,
that's great. That sounds really cool. That to me.
Oh, there you go. Feast for Odin. Hello. I've just actually had, I've just had a look at what they do. Abandoned they did, okay.
Otoku.
Oh,
Otoku was says.
They did Silk.
They did Silk as well. Jules, I'll tell you what, just while we're on here. I've got a Silk promo card for you that came in my Botoku game, so I will ship that down.
I've already got one. Already got
there
it.
There you go. Oh, well.
Got it sorted.
I tried. myself as well, like recently, I've been playing lots of different games. One of them we're going to hear about a little bit later on, so I won't go into that. But at the moment, I had one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had. Ever.
Whoa.
Big call.
Big call. And I played 18 Chesapeake. And
okay, 18XX.
I loved it.
Choo-choo.
I loved it. I was blown away by it, to be honest. And I knew I would like it. I love, like, it really is kind of at its core, like a stock market engine builder type thing. Like, that's really kind of what you're doing.
All right. Better or worse than City of the Big Shoulders?
I preferred it.
Okay. Cool.
I preferred it.
Because I know you love that game.
Yeah, that's really good as well. But that's one of those ones where it's like, it is a worker placement game. It is a proper sort of traditional board game to a degree.
Sure.
So, and it's more, you know, talking about it, for the 18XX games are massive. Like, they're a huge hole and pit in themselves. So this is the entry level, like, learner game. Completely understand that, but I absolutely loved it. Would I like to go further into it? Definitely. I would like to try some more of the other ones. I wouldn't like to try and learn it myself and do it myself, but luckily I've got my man Def, who's just going to help me out with that. He's keen as to play them anyway. But like, the City of the Big Shoulders, what I found that was very different is you have this resource system on your board and you buy these companies and you have to build these resources, right? So on that, that's a little game in itself, like a puzzle within the puzzle. You don't really have that in the 18XX. It's more like the tracks and updating the tracks and building on those. But the stock market part of the game is amazing. Like, that's where the game really shines. It's all that crazy stock stuff. And I mean, I came second and I was 100 out of the game. I think, I mean, I have to look up the scores exactly, but it was very tight. But I love the fact that you start off with like the crappy steam trains. Like, that's what it starts with. And you sort of put the tracks down that have very basic tracks. So I think from memory, they were brown or yellow in color. And I think they were yellow in color actually. And they start off, you know, just maybe one straight line and a station. And each time you're going to go through that phase of the game, you can send it your train two stops because it's crappy and old, like it's, you know, the latest tech at the time. But as the age of the steam train changes and upgrades, they can go three stops. So then you're gaining more money because every stop you go to, you gain more money. And then as you upgrade the stations themselves will have a better industry because maybe they've got more tracks, more facilities or whatever. So they actually pay out more. So you want to upgrade the ones that you're going to so that as your train on on that phase of the game moves along, it goes from stop, stop, stop. You might get 40, 30, and 20 rather than 10, 20, and 10. Like, it was long. I'm not going to say anything, but the game went for like 5.5, 6 hours, but it felt like 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
The time just disappeared. I was so like focused on it and enjoying it. I never was like, oh, you know, like sometimes when it's like, it's someone else's turn and you're just like, oh, to please, like, let's just get this finished. Like, it's been like 2.5 hours. I just want to get this done. It never felt like that. It was constantly had me completely engaged, completely like thinking of my next move and whatever people were doing with their stations, because obviously I was on those same railway networks and I was, yeah, I was the first person to buy two companies in the game, which I was like, I thought, you know, I don't usually do that. I usually kind of turtle. I sit back, let everyone else do the stuff. I happily just, I'm happy with my one thing and I'll just plod along. But this time I was like, I'm just going to buy another one because I can. And then it kind of got to the other point where I was making so much money and I was getting more efficient. In the last like round, I bought a third company really cheap, did really well with it. It made me a whole heap of money because I was running diesel station, diesel trains by the end of the game. And that's where the points are, because the diesel train has no limit to the stops. As long as all connected on a line and it's connected to your station, you can pass through it. But the only thing is you, if you had, say, two trains to the same company, you can't go on the same track twice. So that particular company, I just bought that and I bought it for at the stock price of being 90. So I instantly got $900, however that worked out. I can't remember the math behind the whole thing, which allowed me to immediately buy a diesel train, which then immediately meant I could run it and I could go through all these stops and just start churning money out of it straight away. I loved it, even though I didn't completely understand the whole thing, because there's a lot going on. And for someone who's never played an 18XX, I never read a rule book for an 18XX, never researched it or anything. I just was like, Jeff says these are good. I really want to try it. And we had a great time. So
I was going to ask you, the closest I've gotten to playing an 18XX game, and I know this isn't one, but have you played Age of Steam?
Yeah. I haven't played that yet, no.
Okay, because I was going to ask you a comparison
With Def and Sarah, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've got a copy, and I've played it a solo a few times using the solo map. It doesn't have the whole stocks thing, but very much managing behind the scenes the cost of your operations, but you're not investing in other networks per se. But it has a similar aesthetic. To some of the newer 18XX games.
Yeah, it definitely has as a pretty version of an 18XX game. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And that's the funny thing is, like, I'm not bothered about how it looks. Like, it doesn't worry me at all as long as I'm enjoying the game.
Sure.
I mean, like, man, I played Monopoly for 5 days for one game when I was, like, 8 years old. And I thought that was the best thing ever.
You don't need to bring up your childhood trauma.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why I'm so like duck to water with these things, because it can look bland, but as long as the gameplay is good and I'm engaged, I'm enjoying it, you know, it doesn't matter. But I'll tell you the scores quickly. So Def got $3,087. Ben got $4,300. I got $5,704. And Dimmy got $5,850. So I was like hot on the tail of first place.
Yeah, right.
And the only reason why that happened was because I invested into Dimmy's company like quite early, because I was like,
smart.
If I know how to play these games, invest in Dimmy. That's what I said to Ben. Ben was like,
whenever I play City of the Big Shuttles, I always just invest in whatever Steve's bought.
Yeah,
just find someone who knows what they're doing, just run their coattails for a while.
That's exactly. That's what I did. And I bought that. And then what happened was at the end of the game, it got really close. And I wanted to buy that other company. But the problem is there's a maximum amount of shares you can own at one time. I believe it's 16 from memory. So I couldn't buy them. I couldn't buy this company because I had too many shares. So I started offloading shares all over the place of like, you know, 10% of Def's company, which is already not doing the fantastic, you know, like in this other company, I got rid of a share of that. And then I had three of Dimmy's, and because I dropped all three, her share price dropped down three places, which then I knew that it was me and Dimmy that were doing the best. So to drop her share price down, it was the best thing I could do to try and sort of tank her, to try and help me move forward. And I mean, it was just so interesting, man. Like the whole shares thing, it was so streamlined and so simple how it works from round to round. It's not difficult. It's this big board full of numbers. Like if you've ever seen any of these 18XX games, it's a massive like grid of numbers. It's like 57, you know, or 55, 65, 75. And then there's another one of those like further along two columns up and it's like 55, 65. And you're like, how does that all work? But once you start to play it and start to move the stock token around, it becomes quite intuitive. But yeah,
I'd love to get someone from all the board games on the show to talk to them about 18XX. Because my understanding is that 18 Chesapeake is sort of touted as like the entry, a great starting point to the 18XX games. But there's just so many of them and they're all completely different. It's not like Ticket to Ride where there's different maps and there are just so many, but they're all from Days of Wonder and they're all sort of generally from the same kind of designers that the designers that are chucking out all these 18XX games and have been for years and years are all varied kinds of styles and different regions. And it's just, I'd love to find out more about it. I don't know what necessarily my cup of tea.
They all derived from one original game, which I can't remember the name. That one for the life.
But it's super old as well. It's an old game. 2020, but it's been going for, I want to say, 20 years or so. Because almost the old ones are almost like print and plays, aren't they?
Mm.
Yeah, I'd like to reach out to someone and talk to someone about it.
Yeah. Sure.
It was a really good entry level of it. It actually looks really nice. The componentry is really nice. I backed an 18XX game of a similar pedigree, you know, it's got nicer pieces, it's more aesthetically pleasing, and it's also an entry level. I think it's a Shinduku, maybe? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
But it's a Japanese one. It's based on, like, the Japanese Shikoku, island.
1889.
There you go. That's it. And it's got a really nice map on it. It's got really nice componentry. So I think this is something that I would like to play again and continue to play. But I really want to play 1862 because that map is my region of where I was born. So I know all of the cities, all of the towns, all of the villages that are there. I know every single part of that map, like intricate. Nice. But it apparently is way more complicated. You have different trains, different industries. It's not just trains. It's like one of them's a commercial train. One of them's a passenger train. So there's just like another level that I'm not willing to like take that jump and try.
Yeah.
There's an 18XX game for where I grew up as well. It starts at, it's basically the Frankston line. And it starts at Flinders Street Station and then ends at a dumpster fire in Frankston.
Yeah. Just two stops. Right. It just goes back. two stops. That's it.
Oh, no. You're best getting off before Dayenong.
But yeah, 18 Chesapeake, like anyone that's ever interested in 18XX games, there is a website as well where you can actually play these online quite easily. Like it's its own thing. You would just Google play 18XX games online, it'll come up. There's a big community, there's lots of Discord channels to find these things. But anyone that's played any kind of engine builder game, or even just knows how to do basic, how stocks work, investing and, you know, selling and stuff, you could easily pick this up. It's not
hard.
And the rule book, I think the rule book's like 11 pages. It's not
a lot
to it. It's very small.
Nice. So. Good stuff. Well, I think with that, we're ready to move on to the bracket battle.
Hi there, everybody. It's Adrian from the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I just want to talk a little bit about 2D6 Games in Brisbane. Dan, Dave, and Joe are a great community-focused team who offer free shipping Australia-wide, which is awesome because we all know those shipping costs are just going up every week. They also directly support the Board Game Barbecue Podcast and the Board Game Barbecue Game Days. So please check out their website at 2d6games.com.au. Thank you.
All right, so this round of the bracket battle is sponsored by Game Toppers. You can head over to gametoppersllc.com to pick up every gamer's favorite accessory, which is a game mat. They are just brilliant to play on, and they make good tables as well. So head over there to check out what they have in stock.
I actually have it on good authority that they have some new Kickstarter stuff coming in a couple of months.
Cool. So I'm excited to see what artwork they have because the last one had awesome stuff.
I'm with you, man. That stuff is beautiful. Like that Treasure Island looking one.
Yes.
Everyone comments about that, Matt. Everybody asks, like, where'd you get that? Or, you know, what game is this from? And it's just like, no, this is just
game
this is just how it is. Yeah.
So. Yep. Good stuff. All right. So we have a bracket battle to resolve. And last week it was Anachrony versus Clank. And
you've already been into the future to find the results.
I have been into the future. I can confirm there is a winner. It was a very tight result. But how do you guys think it would have shaken down?
I don't know. I mean, Clank's got wide appeal.
That's what I think, Dan.
Yeah. But my vote would – I didn't vote only because I haven't played Anachrony, but my vote would have been with Anachrony only because it feels like more my kind of game. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel it was fair to vote not having played it.
Mm-hmm.
But just the way yourself and Def have described playing it in the past, just went, yeah, that's probably more my jam.
Yeah.
Then Clank, which when I played Clank back in the day, and that's probably where it stayed, because as a deck builder, it was fun, but I think there's better deck builders out there now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I know that a lot of people, not necessarily complained, but voiced their opinion that if it was Clank in space, they would have
picked. Yeah, I did see a few of those comments.
Yeah, I saw a few of those comments too.
So there must be a huge difference. That's the thing. Like, I'd love to know what these differences are specifically.
I'm sure we'll hear about that soon because it was Mike's oath, I'm pretty sure, to play Clank in space. So,
you guys aren't saying it right.
Oh, Clank in space.
Come on, bit of gusto, people.
Well, I don't need to give it gusto because Clank is out. Anachrony won by one vote.
Wow.
One vote.
It's the closest, I think, ever, isn't it? Like,
I think we had one other matchup in the first season of the bracket battle.
Jaws the Lion or something.
Can't quite remember, but this was one vote. It was dead votes, dead even on Discord. Facebook had four more in favor of Anachrony, and Instagram had three more in favor of Clank. So that was the difference there, but so tight on all the platforms. So Anachrony will speed on into the future and live another day.
That's cool.
So let's head up, get the gloves on for the next round because we have Pandemic Legacy versus Cartographers.
I've played both of these. Has everyone played both?
I've only played Cartographers, so maybe I'll be the adjudicator for this one since both of you have played both of them.
And you've played Pandemic Vanilla, right?
Normal I have played Pandemic. A Vanilla Pandemic, multiple times, but not the Legacy version.
I think I'm pretty sure Cartographers is my entry.
All right, so we'll throw you in the Cartographers corner, and Adrian's going to take the Pandemic corner.
I think Pandemic might be the communities, so...
Oh, right, okay. Fair call.
Well, having put together a Patreon podcast on the subject,
I think good ammo now.
You're qualified.
Yeah, that's right.
Good stuff. All right. Well, since you're hot on that episode, Adrian, how about you start off with Pandemic Legacy? Why is it better than Cartographers?
Cartographers is all right. Like, it's an all right game. It's a better app, but I won't even go there. Like, it's Pandemic Legacy has been, I mean, anyone that mentions, I want to play a Legacy game, what do I start with? Everybody says Pandemic Legacy. Like, it's a great game. It's a great game if you play two-handed solo. It's a great game if you play a four player and you meet for a weekly game night and you make it like your weekly feature. But it's synonymous with being up there with the greatest of pandemics. Like, it's the one that started it, and it's the one that everyone still loves the most. Pandemic Season 2 was great. It's got some really cool spoilers and really cool twisty stories. Pandemic Zero came out. Disappeared. No one probably played it because they probably got halfway through and stopped. But Pandemic Legacy Season 1 is the one that everyone completes unless you're Dan and you can't be bothered because you just get too old and grumpy and you're just like, stuff this, I'm done. But it's so good. The stories and the twists and the elements that are in this are like so suited to today's society and what's happening in the world. So if you don't mind a bit of that, it's great for that because it actually plays on that really well. And this is a game that that has been used in universities for university students to discuss and study how a virus works and how a virus mutates through the world. I mean, this is an educational tool for future society.
That's You're making fact. That up.
No, I'm not. I am. In the show notes, the article will be there. I promise. Dan's going to make it happen.
Oh, we'll see about that.
But it's a great game.
You've got and two I mean, days before release to actually write that thesis down.
write that dissertation. I think you're
full of it.
I mean, it's a great game. And I think if I have to say it, I think this is the one legacy game that the majority of groups do complete.
Yeah.
I'd Gloomhaven, agree. Doesn't happen.
No.
Because the Lion, maybe a few people, you know. This one is the one I think a lot of people play. It's like BGG. What is it, like number 5 or 6 now? It's still up there. It's not like it's not even dropped out the top 10. I don't think it's still the and it's the one as well. Like that, one thing that I do like to say about it, and I've said it before, it's the best kind of wedding gift present for someone because it's a memory. You're buying a memory. Like when you play this and you've completed it as a group or a couple, it's a memory that you never forget. And also when you finish it, I spoke to Andy Leacock about it himself, it goes on the wall. People build this as a piece of art that sits in there, and it's like a microcosm of the time of when they were together and they completed this game. So I just think it can't be beaten as a legacy game.
Wait, did you say Andy for a second? It's Matt Leacock.
Yeah. Oh, Matt Leacock. Yeah, sorry.
It's like, what? Andy?
Oh, I call him Andy on the weekends. He's cool.
don't worry, Jules. There are plenty of factual mistakes in everything that Adrian just said in the last 5 minutes. But yeah, dismissing Risk Legacy as being the first legacy game.
Oh.
I didn't say it was the first. I said it's the best.
Right.
All right. I think you've thrown enough punches, Adrian. Dan. Cartographers, why is it better?
Speaking of art, a work of art, if you go on BGG and see some of the maps that the cartographer players, they are outstanding. Now, Adrian wouldn't be able to do it because he's still using crayons. He didn't get his pencil license and pen license from school. So that's why Adrian doesn't like cartographers. But in terms of the flip and rights that are out there, this is the best flip and right game out there. Because it combines everyone's love of polyomino figures as well. And it has that interaction with each other when the orc card comes out. So many of the flip and rights, roll and rights, there's not a lot of. You can play it solo, you can play with 100 people, it's not going to matter. But cartographers, I've never had a cartographer's game that wasn't thoroughly enjoyable, particularly when those orc cards come out and everyone has to pass their map to the left or to the right of them and get to mess with someone else's work. That is so much fun. But it is one of those games that really is a great game day. I taught it at the last Melbourne Game Day. It's a great game day. It's a great game for small groups, big groups, and even as Adrian says, the app itself is great as well. It plays really well solo. It's really clever the way they have the point system with the different objectives, and the objectives are basically a negative. So you've got something to try and work towards to try and get your score into the positive. That's really, really, really clever. But no, as far as flip and rights that are out there at the moment, Cartographers is the best one out there. And what you don't only get to play it sort of 12 or 24 times. You can play it as many times as you want. Once you've played
Pandemic Legacy, you'll play it 5 times. You get bored.
Are you ever going to play Pandemic Legacy again? No. Let alone people that don't finish playing it, as you attested to, people don't always finish playing it.
Well, you're proof of that, aren't you? Really?
Correct. Correct. I am proof that you're wrong. Cartographers is a game you can play for ages.
Yeah. I like vanilla Pandemic. I'm sure I'd enjoy Pandemic Legacy, but I think my vote would go with Cartographers simply for the fact you raised. I think you had a good point there, Dan. Cartographers has the
best. Can you remind me what it was then?
Yeah.
Best interaction of any flip and write, roll and write.
Yeah.
Easily. That's a good point. By a country mile. And it's such a simple little thing, but by far the best interaction. And they have a online map generator, so you've got infinite combinations of maps you can play as to print off. That is just awesome. They took a game that had two maps and have just turned it into infinite. So yeah, that's where my vote's gonna go. Anyway,
I also like the $30 US dollar pencil set that you can buy yeah, part of the Kickstarter.
Yes. I didn't do that.
Nah, no one would do that. That's insane. Who would buy those for that money? Did you buy those, Dan?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't buy the pencils. Yeah, but I did buy the mat. I bought the mat. Yeah. I've got
the mat's good. The mat is
good. I put that out the game days. It's just,
I do have to say one thing about Katogra. I actually really like Katogra. It's a great game. But I do think that like the pencils, like the just getting the standard pencils is such a slog. They should have just put colored pencils in, charged an extra $2, and I would have been happy rather than going out and, you know, grabbing.
Yeah, I went to Officeworks and bought. Yeah. I bought some packs that I took with me the game day. Everyone had their own pack of pencils. And they were like $2 each.
What
we did was we went to Kmart, bought 5 packets of pencils, used the colors for each box, and just put a rubber band around them, and then we just gave Finn the rest of the pencils to use for school and stuff.
You're right. Jules, awesome game, Adrian.
Jules, is it true or not? Did some university studies be used for pandemic? Because I linked you that link a while ago.
You have sent a link, but I can't verify whether it's correct or not.
I worked really hard on writing that the past 4 minutes.
All right. So it's up to you now, community. Is it going to be Pandemic Legacy or Cartographers Going Through? So hit up our socials on Facebook in the Board Game Barbecue community. Head over to Instagram on the story and also on Discord in the Bracket Battle channel to cast your votes. It's going to be a tight one, I reckon.
It will.
So I'm very keen to see how this one comes out. But with that done, we'll move on to the last segment of the podcast, which is to swear an oath. So before we dive into our oaths, I just want to let everyone know how you can support the podcast. So you can head over to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue to donate to us, and you get access to, as we said before, exclusive podcasts, the 12 Pods of Christmas for the past 2 years, as well as many other ones that we've done over the past couple of years. There's also ways to help us that are free. You can head over to whatever your podcast app of choice is. If they have a star rating on Apple, you can do that, and Spotify's new star rating system as well. Just give us a cheeky 5 stars. It helps us get up there and get more people seeing the podcast. That would mean the world to us. And if you write words to that review, you've got Dan the Man that's going to read those out in the podcast.
You just reminded me. I'm just checking. Give me a minute.
I saw him jump up and grab his phone.
Just vamp. Yeah.
You can also get involved in the Board Game Barbecue community on Facebook. So there's loads of people there chatting about the oaths they've sworn and games they've been playing. Just there's so much activity going on there. A great place to get involved and chat more with the community. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube as well. And, of course, the Discord community. There's tons of things happening there. Loads of games being played all the time. We've got Paint Club that I'm running coming up if you want to paint your minis. I've been posting pictures of recent projects that I've been finishing, and it's been heaps of fun. So all the links to those various places will be in the show notes below. All right, oath time. I'll go first. So there's... my oath at this point in time is to paint all the aliens in the core box for Nemesis Lockdown. I've made progress on that. I'm definitely feeling the pinch because I've got a busy week this week and not much time to do other stuff, but we'll see how I go by the end of this month. I really want to play the game fully painted, so I'm not going to swear to play Nemesis yet. I'll wait till I finish my painting. And I'm going to have my first play fully painted up.
Fully immersive experience. I understand experience. That, dude. That's brilliant.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And as someone who regularly paints minis, you can afford to make that kind of statement. I however, cannot. Yeah. mine just arrived this week. And if I decide I was going to leave, because I actually didn't pay for separate shipping, so I've got the whole thing, the whole shebang arrived this week. If I said, I'm not going to play it until I paint them, it would never get played.
Well, I've just got a really
interesting conversation with someone about that just recently.
He
said, what would you rather do? Would you rather spend like a lot of time painting the minis absolutely perfectly and making sure it's absolutely mint and beautiful and, you know, really spend a lot of time on it?
Yeah.
And it might take you, like, Dan, how long realistically you think if you plugged away at it, what, a year, do you think?
Oh,
longer.
Probably.
And then longer.
If it was a regular Friday night thing that I could do, maybe I could get it done by the end of the year.
But, sure. Okay,
so let's say you took a year to do it. By the end of it, you'd probably just sell the game because you wouldn't have played it, and it's never been played, and it's gone. And at the moment, it's
completely
kind of
unpunched.
But
everything would be half painted.
But then, or you could just, you maybe not do a great job on the paint, not crazy, but, you know, give them some color, some basic stuff and some shading and a wash, and you might have that thing running in 2 or 3 months. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of interesting, really, because I just thought, yeah, so you're right. Like, I mean, Jules, you're lucky because you're good at painting, and for what would take me 12 hours would take you maybe 2 hours, but yours would look good and mine would look like crap. So, you know, you've done it a lot, and it takes a lot of practice. So you have to put a lot of practice in, and then you're putting hours in, then you're not gaming, and it's a really weird cycle, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So as we've just been talking, I had no idea what I was going to do for my oath because I have got a lot going on at the moment. But as we've been talking and saying, I want to paint my full Nemesis box before I play it. The most recent project I just finished was Cosmic Frog. And I'm really happy with how they came out. And I've only played it once. And that was when I first bought it. But now it's fully painted up. And I think I want to swear to get Cosmic Frog back to the table now that they're fully painted and really enjoy that experience. So that's what I'm awesome. Going to do.
That's getting a round of applause from me. That's really cool. Because not only have you painted them, you're like committing to just get this to the table now to play it. And I think people will love to see that painted up.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going to do. Play Cosmic Frog by the time I'm on the next podcast. All right. Let's throw to Dan.
All right. We've had another review come through. This is from the Maori Hulk.
I love that name.
Always good to have a listen to. Never had anything to do with board games until Adrian brainwashed me at work, and now I'm sure I could run my own barrage game.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know that guy. I know that handle as soon as you read that out. So
I knew you would know it.
I often listen to the podcast at work and, you know, have it on a radio where there's like 40 people having to listen to it. So yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, so everyone at Adrian's work site, get back to work.
Yeah. I'll be there in 20 minutes.
This was an unexpected just jumping off the bench tonight. So I haven't played my most recent oath, which was to do the campaign for Under Falling Skies. Mm-hmm. However, I did actually get Under Falling Skies out and I played it a couple of times during the week just to sort of get a refresh. Feel for it again.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I was playing it going, this feels easier than I remember. And I don't know if it's because I've been playing a lot of solo games lately, or I've been getting more into the roll and rights and things, but just with the dice placement and where to put things and how to, I found it surprisingly easier than I did the first time around when I played it. I still enjoyed it, but I'm sort of, I think I'm ready now to actually have a crack at the campaign after cutting my teeth on it again. Mm-hmm. So that will happen.
Yeah.
I had an older oath, which I did technically succeed in playing because I played Detective, a modern crime board story game. That one with Jonathan, but we played it over two nights on Discord. I shared my screen and we played it. I had a few people jumping in to say hi as well. Mm-hmm. But we failed the test at the end. So we actually decided, right, we're not going to just push on to chapter two. We'll actually redo it. And we redid it during the week, just by the by, and we did actually pass it. And we missed heaps the first time around. So it wasn't that we were just able to just really rush through it, because we took our time. We looked at things that we hadn't looked at before. We developed a better way of taking notes this time around, obviously, so that we didn't miss anything. And we didn't sort of cheat a great deal, even though there was things where we'll go down here. It's like, no, we did that last time. And remember, it's a dead end. It's like, oh, well, we've already said we're going to do it, so we'll still do it. And you know, we tried to play it as honest as we could. We succeeded in finishing the first chapter, and there are a bunch of cards from chapter one that you end up taking and putting into chapter two. There's actually one card that we found, or one clue sort of, or plot point that we uncovered that goes into chapter four. So you know that things are going to come back around sort of later on in the story as well. So we're really excited. We're going to
I knew you would love all that stuff, Dan.
Yeah.
So you're putting that stuff and you're like, I need to know what that stuff is. I need to start going.
We're going to try again this Wednesday or Thursday night and tackle chapter two. So if anyone's around on Discord, feel free to jump on and join in as well. So there was that. But my new oath, because we always double down, is going to be a game that I picked up at the start of the year secondhand from someone from our community, Joe, and it's Targi. I know it's been a fan of a few people on the pod before, and it was sort of I was aware of it as a two-player game, but I didn't really know much about it. And having looked into it, I just went, yeah, I reckon probably Jen would go for that one. So
yeah, cool.
So I'm going to play Targi before the next time on the podcast, and I think Targi is still in the bracket battle as
well. I believe it is.
Yeah. When it comes up, I'll be able to speak to it as well. So I, Dan Harris, swear to play Targi before the next time I'm on the podcast.
Nice. Adrian.
Mate, I am still trying to understand Hadrian's Wall, and I am giving up. I'm doing worse. My scores are going down. I'm getting worse. Oh,
dear.
I had like 68 was my best score, and that's gone to like 50. Then I'm a 44. I got 40 the other day.
You're really sliding.
Well, I was like, I'm trying different things to try and understand what does what and what's going to really push this game and stuff, but it's just not happening. I'm making it worse. Whatever it is, I'm like picking a scab. It's just making it worse. Just leave it alone. Definitely time to leave that alone. But I actually really like the game, and it's really nice because I know that my partner opposite me playing it is doing way better and getting a better score each time MJ plays it. So
yeah, right.
It's like, it's one of her favorite games, one of her favorite flipping rights. She loved it as soon as she picked it up and played it the first time. She instantly was trying to buy it, but there was a big drought over Christmas for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally got it, and we've played it heaps, heaps and heaps. So I just suck at it, which is fine. But I definitely, my oath of trying to understand it is a massive fail because I don't think I'll ever understand it. But I like it. I still think it's good, and I enjoy playing it. So
yeah,
I've done it more than 10 times now, so I'm happy to pass that on.
Nice.
Wow.
But this is an oath that is going to be one of those long-running oaths which I will check back every week, because at the moment I'm currently involved in two other people's oaths because they decided to drag me down to their level, and I won't spoil I won't spoil how badly they failed those yet. They can do that themselves
when they're next on.
But I am actually, we bought our biggest game ever when we sold our house, and it is just sat there, and it's a massive black box and done nothing for months.
Oh, yeah.
Said we were going to do it when we moved house, and it's just sat there looking at me, and I had this really cool opportunity. The G-Money came round and was talking to me about some games, and he was really keen to play this game. And I was really keen to just start it and just understand it. I haven't read the rule book. I haven't looked at it. It's just sat there in that black box and just sat there, hasn't moved. And he said, hey, look, if you want, I'll take the first minis from the prologue, build them, paint them, and then we'll play the prologue. And I was like, that sounds great. Let's do that. So Kingdom Death Monster is getting started.
Yeah.
You're getting spoiled there.
But
he's getting more spoiled.
I am also getting more spoiled, but there's a caveat to this. He's going to do those. I'm going to start the other ones. I'm going to start, I can't remember the name of it, but it's like, I believe it's like it's a demonic looking goat creature.
It's the screaming antelope.
That's the one. That guy. Of course it is. So I'll start that. And it's sort of a slow progress of building and painting these. So since everyone else drags everyone else into oaths, maybe I could drag someone else into my oath,
mm-hmm.
possibly, if that's okay. But I know that Jules loves the lore behind this and the look of this and the aesthetic of this. But I don't think you're going to rush out and grab it anytime soon.
No. Especially Gene in Melbourne has a copy and with some extras as well. We're going to actually start a campaign in March. So I'm very excited for that.
And I know that after the last podcast, listening to how passionately you talked about enjoying painting them and giving them their own little tweaks and looks, I thought that if you'd like, you could choose any one from that box and I'll let you can paint it if you wish, but there's no obligation to. It's only if you would like to.
Heck yeah, I'm in. I'll do The Watcher, I think it's called. There's a cool ethereal ghost-looking one.
Yeah, the cape-looking thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's got loads of lanterns hanging off of it.
Yeah.
And The Butcher.
Ooh, two.
I've got to paint The Butcher.
Okay, cool. I'm down for that. That's a good one. And there's no pressure for me. You can finish that oath whenever you like. You know cool. me. I always foul my oaths, so it doesn't matter. It's fine.
Well, in that case, send an extra one down and I'll paint it.
Yeah, that's it. I'll send you one. It's okay. I'll send you something. I'll send you something
to paint. Oh, yeah, it's,
I mean, they are. They come on sprues, Dan. They're like an Airfix.
Yeah, you got to build
them.
Yeah.
So, like, even just looking at that tray, I was like, I'm out of my depth here. And G Money came round and opened the thing and was like, boom, 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 grabbed some stuff, started clicking them off, and had built the line in like 2 minutes.
Yeah, don't worry. You're in safe hands with me. I've done decades of Warhammer, so.
Yeah, but I definitely want to try it myself as well. So I'm not going to be like, here, Jules, paint everything. Go for it. Pressure's on you. It'll be nice.
I'll send you the invoice.
Yeah, exactly. I want to paint the antelope and start that so that by the time that we get to that part of the game,
it's ready.
Things are done and it's ready to go. Because I'm kind of like Jules with that game. I really would like to have it painted before playing it. Yeah, I think that absolutely. Would add a lot to it. So
yeah.
And I might do my, because there's a phoenix in there and there it's is. Like this crazy demonic looking phoenix thing. And everyone, I've seen loads of different people paint it differently. Some people have got like a rainbow colored phoenix. Some people have gone really dark and black and made it look almost like a crow creature. And I really like that aspect of all these different like takes on the same thing. So I think I'll have a good think about what I want to do. I'll probably come to the paint club that Jules runs and I'll probably ask for some advice.
Nice.
And I'll try and paint that at some point closer to the end of the project. But I'm really, I'd like to do my own take on it as well.
Yeah. So. That's what I love about painting. You can have your own flavor inserted into the board game and make it more yours. I love that.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I'm excited for that one. Can't wait to get those and paint them up. That'll be fun.
I thought you'd like it.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. Well, with that oath done, that brings us to the end of the show. So thank you, Dan, and thank you, Adrian.
Thanks, Jules.
And thank you to everyone listening, and a special thank you to our legendary patron supporters. We can't do this out without you guys. So thank you again for that support. And that'll be it for us. We'll see you next time. We hope your next game is a seasoning one. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.